Dear Shooter, it's reloading season again, but you may be noticing components are hard to come by. Oh, and hey, if you live in Kansas, go thank your local district judge for finally recognizing the NFA as unconstitutional.
It's not about protecting the stupid, it's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. and it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe, and you are not sacred, and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all. Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I want to know.
I looked like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
Happy Thursday, and there's about a million and a half things going on right now. In the top of the list, I think, is this Kansas. He's a U.S. district judge in Wichita.
It turned a lot of heads, yeah.
A guy goes, they charged him, the U.S. government charged this guy with possession of a machine gun. And this judge dismissed the case on the grounds that the Second Amendment covers him under this, that they like, machine gun is lawful under the Second Amendment.
Well, it's considered arms. So by definition, yes, it does cover it.
Now, was he being charged because he didn't have the appropriate paperwork for said machine gun?
That's what it looks like. So this guy bought, it's a Anderson AM-15. It looked like it was a 300 blackout. And he got some kind, my guess is, he got his hands on some kind of an auto sear or binary or force reset trigger, something of that nature. And the prosecutor, being the idiot that most of them are, tried to call this, and even in the court documents, he calls this a Glock switch.
Yeah. So it's a temporary modification of the firearm that allows it to fire more than one at a time.
Per press of the trigger.
But if you look at some of the other case law, it's not a machine gun unless it's a permanent modification to the firearm.
Right.
So this is not a permanent modification by all definitions.
No. No. The ruling that the federal law tightly regulating the ownership and transfer of full auto firearms is unconstitutional under the 2022 Bruin decision.
That's interesting. Okay. I'll play along.
This ruling marked the first time that machine gun restrictions have been found unconstitutional. So it's my excitement is this. Is this going to be the first real legal challenge to the NFA?
It started in the right place, the right way. So it very well may be the first real legal challenge to it. And they're going to have a hard time because the ATF and the NFA have historically screwed up their definitions and not kept pace with the market, the industry, how things are done. The second they make a rule, there's somebody out there learning how to get around it legally.
Well, and I was reading their definition of a machine gun, and it is any weapon which shoots, is designed to shoot, or can be readily restored to shoot automatically more than one shot without manual reloading by a single function of the trigger. That's any gun out there.
Correct.
I mean, with the right know-how, with the right machining, you can make any gun into a machine gun.
By that definition, you're absolutely right. But then they go further to define it has to be a permanent modification of the firearm for it to be classified as a machine gun.
Right.
Otherwise, you have to pay the tax stamp for your Class 3 item. So when you would take an AR-15 and you convert it to an M16 by doing the auto sear in the small little hole above the safety selector.
Right.
That's a permanent modification to the firearm.
Because I made a hole. Because
you made a hole.
Right.
In the receiver. Right. You drop in a FosTec, you can do relatively close to full auto fire with a binary.
Right.
And it's not a permanent modification to the firearm.
No, it's not. And I'm almost, and I think you can get even faster with some of these force reset triggers.
I think you can.
They're pretty impressive.
But let's go back to the intent of it, though. Why? Because it's fun. I mean, we call it the giggle switch.
We do, for a reason.
But they don't make the firearm more accurate.
No. In fact,
they don't make it more deadly.
No.
A full auto fire was designed to do what?
Keep heads down.
That's exactly right.
It's suppressive fire.
Suppressive fire. So it's not more lethal. It's not more scary. It's not more evil.
Mm-mm.
It's a way to generate tax funds.
Right. Well, and the arguments here, too, is ammo's expensive right now. And you've shot a Dillon.
I have.
Right? How long did it take you to expend 1,000 rounds?
About a second and a half. It was retarded fast.
Right. And the one you did, was it 308 or 5.56?
I shot a 308 version.
Okay. So $3 a round, 1,000
yep.
rounds
right.
in a second and a half.
Yep.
You do the math.
It's not for my budget.
I can't afford that.
No.
And, I can't afford the Dillon to begin with, but even if it was legal.
Yeah. And I was riding in the door of a helicopter. So at the end of the day, I was in a whole lot of stuff above my pay grade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, full auto, you're right. It has one use, really. I could say, you know, if you're talking anti-armor or anti-vehicle, anti-stuff, it's not really an anti-personnel. I mean, you can cut people in half with it, but the accuracy sucks.
You might get one or two in your initial press of that trigger.
Right.
But that firearm walks. When Brandy shot a full auto at a range day for an industry thing we went to. There was two guys standing behind her to keep her from falling backwards.
Mm-hmm.
But she started at the ground level of the target at 50 yards and took a diagonal path all the way across the paper.
Yep.
So don't make fun of my crotch shot now because I'm going to get you from the crotch to the brain eventually.
Right. But it's not an accuracy enhancing thing.
No.
It's not more lethal by any definition whatsoever.
No, it's not. And I mean, with the exception of having that ability of providing suppressive fire, I don't really see a whole lot of use for full auto, look at the military for that reason, because it's less controllable, because it's less lethal. They changed it. Most of their firearms are not full auto. They're 3-round burst.
It was made in a time frame where the Thompson submachine gun was quite popular with a mobster-type environment.
You're talking the NFA.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the definition of a machine gun and not commonly accepted for civilian possession was made in that time frame. Now, the Thompson is fun to shoot in full auto. It's a .45.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subsonic round to start with.
Right.
And you can control that a little bit, but it's still one of those things that's hard to hold on to.
It walks.
Absolutely does. The intent of it is now being applied because the machine guns are scary and dangerous and, you know, nobody should have them. They've lost the meaning of why they have the rule in place.
Right.
And it's not illegal. Let's get this out in front of everybody right now.
Right.
If you pay your tax money.
That's right.
You can have it. And nobody cares.
No, and I'm sure that I could tell you right now, Congress right now, and probably for the last, let's say, close to 20 years, has got to be pissed that when the NFA was established and that price for the tax stamp, that $200 tax stamp, that was set in stone. They don't get to play with that. Because if they did, a tax stamp right now probably cost you $50,000.
It'd be equitable, sure.
But that was the whole idea when they instituted that tax stamp, they were trying to price people out of being able to afford the stuff.
And did it stop anything?
No.
When they instituted the tax stamp is how they keep your register of who owns what.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
interestingly enough, though, they don't get to keep a list. They get you to say you paid your tax, but they don't get to keep a list of what civilians own.
Yeah, like you think they don't.
I know that they do. But
it's a really large desk with a copy machine.
Exactly, but it's a big slippery slope on governmental oversight. And once you start picking at this, it's like a a handmade sweater.
Well, yeah, and I'm not going to go down that road. I don't know about you, but I am like politicked out lately.
Strap in, Buttercup. It's getting worse.
I know. That's what I was just telling Brandy yesterday. You know, politics starts after Labor Day because that's when people start paying attention.
Cool. That's when you stop wearing white too. Very convenient.
Who wears white?
Well, not me. But just saying.
Not around here. You don't.
No, that's just silly. Can't do chores in white.
Yeah. Well, I have seen our neighbor out in white, but she'd had muck boots that went up to her knees.
You need to video this.
I do. I love her to death. Our neighbor is so awesome. She will go outside, t-shirt, sweatpants, muck boots, but perfect makeup.
Well, she's a good-looking woman, but she has to have that armor. I've noticed that.
Okay, the horses at 6:30 a.m. don't give a shit about your eyeshadow. I'm just going to point that out.
She feels better about herself.
Yeah, but you're in the middle of nowhere. No one should see you.
It's for her.
Yeah.
Leave her alone. She does just fine.
Maybe she's overcompensating because we don't have real pockets in our pants anymore.
You don't.
Oh, God.
It's horrible.
Yeah, how are you supposed to? And oh, all right, tangent. I'm warning you right now. I'm about to go out of a tangent. We have bitched about on this show multiple times about, and this is industry-wide, not just gun counter help, but it's the manufacturers too, pushing these little pocket pistols on women. Do they not understand women don't have reasonably sized pockets?
The connection's not been made. Nope.
So how are they supposed to carry them?
Yeah, nope. Lingerie, same thing. It's not for her.
And please stop calling those stretch pants tactical stretch pants.
Well, because they got pockets.
No, they don't. But they have belt loops.
They have cell phone pockets. Yay. On the thigh. They do have pockets, and they are deep and they're real.
No, I saw a pair last weekend.
She had a pocket on the side. She had her cell phone in it.
Was there a pocket?
Which I found completely ridiculous because, you know, things about concealing and being tactical.
You can't hide anything
shit
under there.
Prints. I'm just saying.
Well, they wear them for a reason.
Yeah. Well.
Because
they're comfy.
You shouldn't do it just because you can.
Oh, then now there's a whole different podcast right there.
We've had that one. We even said it out loud. Like a fat chicken stretch pants. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
And you know what? It's great self-defense because someone who's coming up to shoot you goes, whoa, camel toe. Totally caught off guard.
Well, you can't.
That's
not
just the
it.
Toe. That's like half the camel.
Were there humps involved?
All right. Eyes up here, y'all.
I think they were dangling from the shoulders, but no, I digress.
Now you digress? Holy buckets. You digressed 20 minutes ago.
Well, yeah. Squirrel.
Wow. I apologize in advance for you who's listening in the car.
I am not responsible for dashboards or keyboards.
Stay in your lane of travel.
So, you started on your big reloading quest.
God.
I've got to get into it, but oh my God, trying to find components.
It's horrific right now. And it wasn't that long ago. I'm not even showing my age. Primers. You could buy them for $4 a hundred.
Yeah.
Now they're $14 a hundred.
Uh-huh.
That's a big step. They're trying to price you back out of things again.
Yeah. Well, now, let's be clear. We're talking about large rifle match primers.
No, you're talking about primers because the only primers you can get are labeled match primers right now.
Well, yeah, because nobody understands that those are really good primers.
No, they're softer and they're very sensitive. Sure. Uh-huh.
Which is why you have to be very, very careful. If you are using them, I do not recommend using them in a semi-auto.
No. No. That's a bad plan. You will have a cook-off.
Yeah. Well, it's that firing pin that bounces, especially in an AR.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get to a good cyclic rate, that's enough to torch one off.
And forget about it in a lever gun. Just don't do it.
Yeah, no. Oh, God, no. No. And there's a reason that lever guns usually use round nose bullets.
Or flat.
Or flat.
Yeah.
Yep. So what are you reloading for? And I know some of it because I saw your reloading room, and we're probably a little bit different than most reloaders because we do this stuff on a massive scale.
Yeah, Henry Ford got it right. When I set up to reload, I do things in stages because I am prepping and sizing and priming 2,000 rounds of a given specific cartridge at a time. Part of it's my fault because I let it build up to the point where I have containers of brass that would need some back love again.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm running 6.5 Creedmoor and 6.5 PRC through the press this week. And, it takes a minute because both of those I run in somewhat of precision rifles, and they've got to be right. So you size them, and you trim them, and you prime them, and you powder them. And there's a process to it.
And make sure they're separated because 6.5.
Yeah, I got enough calibers that are close that you can, and I've seen it done. You can size the wrong thing to the wrong thing and have a right cartridge in the wrong head stamp.
Yeah, we were just discussing that.
Yep.
Now, one of the things that we noticed today, and this is something that's kind of driven me nuts, and you guys that are in the ammo industry, feel free to comment on this. We were looking specifically at the Hornady rounds. They're projectiles. We're all in absolute love with the ELD match. It's a great cartridge. It's affordable to get the projectiles, but you cannot get a hunting bullet in the same weight as your match bullets.
And I'm sure they make them, they're just not on the shelves. But if you buy 147 ELD, it's an M. It's a match bullet these days.
Right.
I'm trying to make a gun that I'm going to feed my family with. I don't want a match bullet.
No.
I want an X.
Right.
And I know they make them. I just have not seen them. They're like the unicorn.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they do. I got on their website, and I could not find a 147 ELDX.
All right, Jason Hornady, fix that.
Right?
That needs to happen.
Yes, it does. I totally agree. And I've noticed it, and I started looking at their actual loaded cartridges, too. So they've got the ELD match, and then all of their hunting rounds they use the ELDX. They call it the Precision Hunter.
Correct.
And they're always a lighter bullet. Usually anywhere from 5 to 12 grains.
Well, I don't know about you all. You ladder test your gun. Mm-hmm. And I have a match gun. And I have a hunting gun. They do not cross paths.
But are they the same caliber?
They are not.
See, I have that problem.
If you have the same caliber, you just ladder test what you need.
But you got to have the hunting bullet in the weight you like to shoot. Otherwise, all of your ballistics and data and stuff's off. So you're starting over.
Make two ballistic charts.
I know.
Well, that's what he's trying to avoid. And I get that because it is a pain in the butt. You get your gun tuned to an ammo. You know exactly what it's going to do. And now you've changed bullet weights, which means you've probably changed powder charge, which means your ballistics are going to be totally different.
Completely different animal.
And that was something that you and I were discussing the other day. You were telling me about Frank Galli and his new revelation that 1/10 of a mil equates to 10 yards.
Oh, I was watching the video. He was promoting a couple of new optics, and he really likes mils because a 1/10 mil equates to 10 yards downrange.
Now, you and I pulled up several ballistic charts, and it works in about a 300-yard span.
Right.
But under and over that, it completely falls apart.
The other side of it is Frank's talking about pass-fail. Frank shoots a lot of steel.
Mm-hmm.
And in the danger space world, he has a lot of wiggle room and fudge factor there. And it'll work for him. He'll make a positive impact.
Oh, yeah.
But when you're trying to feed your family, you can't afford it to be off.
You know, and even recently, I hunted some species that the kill zone on this thing was like 4 inches.
Yes, you did.
You can't afford to be off.
No, and you're never stable in a hunting situation like that.
No,
you're moving and having to stop rapidly and get in position and execute that shot. Because springbuck, for example, gives you zero time.
I think our PH, our professional hunter over there, told me I had 3 seconds.
Once they, yep, He had 3 seconds to manage all that. You can't be thinking about it.
No.
You have to know where it's at.
Yeah, and a margin of error that you can take on steel, which, like you say, is a pass-fail, you don't get that margin of error.
No, and you wound something.
Right, and that's exactly where I was going with
that.
Which
is not fair.
No.
Do your job and be better at it.
And don't, for God's sake, use match bullets when you're hunting.
Oh, no, 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 no. I've made that mistake. I'll never do it again. I did. I hammered a coyote. It was 300 yards out. And while it totally took the hide off of one side of him, he was going to die. But it didn't kill him.
It wasn't ethical.
Well, not even close.
No, and that's where we really have to get into ethics. One of the things I just taught a long-range class over the weekend. And we were talking about ethics in hunting because, you know, we gear part of this class towards the hunters because you've got three main classes of precision shooting. So you've got your military law enforcement, you've got your competitive shooter, and then you've got your hunter. And all of these guys are using pretty precise rifles, right? They should be able to use them effectively in their context. When we talk about the hunting thing, we do talk about that ethical shot. Now, I think for all of us sitting at this table, that ethical shot kind of ends at about 400 to 500 yards.
For most folks, it does.
But as I was explaining, as a hunter, you need to be capable of making that longer shot. I had an instance of it last year with I was guiding a couple of hunters. We spent 3 days tracking, finally got onto elk. My hunter took a shot, and a totally ethical shot. It was about 350 yards. But he didn't kill it, didn't put it down. So this thing ran. And when it finally stopped and we were able to take another shot, it was now at 860 yards, skylined. And had it gone over that ridge, we were in trouble because it was going places we couldn't follow.
So you had to back him up.
I ranged it. It was 860 yards, and he turned around and looked at me and said, I can't make that shot.
So if you're listening, Game and Fish, it was a total necessity for an ethics thing. He had to back him up. That's not an ideal situation. There's lots of things wrong with that.
Oh, horrible. But at the same time, I laid down, I was able to manage the shot, put her down, but I make that case for hunters, while you need to be making ethical shots up front, sometimes things happen, and you need to be able to be capable of those longer shots in order to end the situation.
On the other side of it, if you know you can shoot 2,000 yards because you play in steel all summer, does not mean that's an ethical shot for an animal, y'all.
Agreed.
Precisely, because as a shooter, what you're doing is you're managing physics and time. That bullet has a flight path, right? The longer it's in the air, the more things can happen at the animal side. So ethics comes down to managing shorter time frames, mm-hmm. right? You get out past that 800-yard range, and you're pushing that 1 second, second and a half flight path, depending on your cartridge. A lot can happen. A full step or three, and either you miss or you've really wounded that animal. Mm-hmm. And that was a good shot when it started, but you misjudged how long it was going to take to get there.
Right, right. And that's why I say, our limit here is probably 400 or 500 yards, depending on the situation. We're probably not going to go beyond that. We'd like to get closer.
When it's hunting, get closer.
Yeah.
Just play that cat and mouse with the animal just a little bit.
Right. That's the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, on the backside, I always impress upon my hunters that come through my long-range classes, look, you need to know that you're capable of this, and you need to be able to deliver on demand.
Right. And you're teaching the classes mostly to folks who are going to use these skills in a hunting application.
Hunting and competition,
because
yes.
The guys that are going to use it on a professional basis, sitting on a rooftop watching some kid crawl onto a rooftop.
That's a little different class.
That's a different class. That's a different guy.
Mm-hmm. Now, teaching it from just the fundamental skill perspective and, you know, establishing data and doing those things that we do, the skills still apply, but it becomes a very much different discussion after that.
But you start that discussion in your loading process, in your purchasing of ammo process, and Brandy's absolutely right. A match bullet is made to fly really, really well and be very, very consistent. It's not meant to hit hard and stay intact, where a hunting bullet does that. Match bullets have thinner jackets. They're designed a little differently because it doesn't matter if it goes through paper or on steel. It doesn't matter.
Right.
A hunting bullet, it matters. You've got to transfer that energy into the animal to stop them right where they stand. And the bullet construction is an absolute critical choice.
Well, and that's why we say you don't carry full metal jackets as defensive ammo because they will go right through your target. You want to dump all of that energy in 9 to 15 inches.
Well, and for those of you listening, full metal jacket is a NATO construct, the Geneva Convention. They wanted full metal jackets on the battlefield for a very specific reason.
Yeah, because they wanted to wound. Well, I've never understood that.
Well, see, it goes through the guy you're shooting at, right? It goes through.
Oh, yeah, and it goes through the three guys behind him.
Possibly. But it takes two guys to carry you off the field. So that one bullet, mathematically, took three people off the field.
No, and I understand the reasoning for it, but...
Not a great bullet choice.
No.
I understand it from a NATO perspective and the legalities of rules of engagement. I get it. But that's not what we're talking about.
No.
That has a specific application. And if you're doing that, that's what you put. That's fine. If you're bound by the rules of engagement.
Right.
Most of us aren't.
No. Which, thank God for that. Because can you imagine the lawsuits that would be happening if we had to use full metal jackets as defensive ammo in the United States?
It doesn't work. Yeah, it would be horrific.
All right. Let's thank our sponsors, and we'll come right back, and I got something else to ask you. The 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company, based in Vail, Colorado, high up in the Rocky Mountains. 10th Mountain is a tribute company to the legendary 10th Mountain Division, maker of fine spirits including bourbon, rye, and vodka, as well as being a generous supporter of the shooting sports and veterans charities. Support those that support us, and to make it easier, 10th Mountain is offering our listeners a discount. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 10% off. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company, whiskey worth fighting for.
All right, so we got to do something kind of fun over the weekend. And I this journey started 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when a friend of yours dropped off a ballistic gel head.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And it sat around your shop for years collecting dust, and you were cleaning some stuff out, and you handed this thing to me and went, ah, you figure out something. So it sat in my shop for about a year until finally... yesterday, we took it out to the range, and we set up the Thomas Cook shot.
You recreated the same distance and everything.
We recreated the distance. I shot this thing with a 300 PRC, which is very, very close to a 300 Win Mag, which is what the Secret Service was using. And the results were interesting, to say the least.
Pretty stunning, actually. And are you shooting a match bullet out of that?
That was a match bullet.
Okay. All right.
That was a 225 grain ELD match moving at 2,900 feet per second at the muzzle.
Now, was the kid shooting match?
Well, it doesn't matter what the kid was shooting. This was the sniper shot that got him.
Snipers don't use match.
A lot of them do.
Well, in this case, they may have. I don't know what they were using.
I don't know exactly what they're using.
I will tell you the wound channel through the ballistic gel was pretty impressive for how short it was. I mean, it was only, human head-sized. And it left a whole bunch of stuff behind. And gel. I mean, not exactly the same as a head, but there's some resemblances. And had that had bone and stuff underneath the skin, there wouldn't have been anything left.
And the entrance was absolutely perfect. It went in the eye socket.
Yes.
It would have scrambled some things. And looking at that, the results of that wound channel, the hydrostatic shock, I can't even imagine what that would have been like.
Oh, it absolutely brutal. Insanely brutal. You pop that head, and it about the same weight as a head, and it came off the ground and flew 20 feet from where it stood.
Mm-hmm.
So it just whatever it was connected to had a lot of stress as well.
Yeah. Well, and let's face it, 300 PRC at 130 yards is a lot of kinetic energy.
It's a lot, lot, lot.
You know, we've had it ring steel, like ring back to us at a mile.
That's right.
And you don't typically hear it at that distance.
No, but that one you can. You got to be quiet and wait because it's a long time coming, but you can hear it.
No, it goes back to that time management thing you were talking about. It, you know, you're what? It's about a 3.5 second flight time to get to the target.
Correct.
And it's about 12 seconds for the sound to come back.
Yeah, if you look at sound versus the projectile, it's about a times 3.25.
Yeah. It's kind of a surreal experience if you've never done it.
Yep. Yep. Looking in the glass, you see it in the time frame of flight, and the shooter is waiting for you to make a call impatiently because it seems like forever when you're behind glass waiting for somebody to say something 3 seconds later.
Yeah. So we were talking about how hard it is to get reloading components. It's also getting really freaking difficult to get components to build guns. I've been working on a few projects, AR builds, and for whatever reason, I cannot find mag releases.
By themselves, you're probably not going to.
But I got like 15 lower kits, and I've sniped the mag release out of all of them. I have none.
Welcome to the plight of a builder. you will always be out of one or two parts to complete the build.
Oh.
And I don't know if they planned this or not, but inevitably, you will find that one part in a kit, not by itself.
Yeah, no, you can't get it by itself. It's
just call Alex.
I will. Call Alex at Armaspec. And maybe I'll get some cool colors, too. But then I'm going to have to order the whole kit in that color so the gun matches.
That is a plight. I mean,
and you shouldn't be mad because your parts are coming back from Cerakote tomorrow.
After you blew up my gun to begin with?
You did do that.
I did do that.
Now, I'm not going to lay that all on you. You had no way of knowing that rifle caliber cartridge was loaded with pistol powder.
No, I didn't, because it was factory.
And it weighed the same, it looked the same, it loaded the same. It just was more violent when it went off.
Well, yeah, because pistol powder is, what, 19 times more pressure than rifle?
That's correct.
And even in a high pressure cartridge, that's too much.
Well, and if you look at, say, 45 Colt,
right?
You're trying to get a 45 caliber projectile to make that 1,100 feet per second magic mark, right? You're running 18 grains of powder to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
45 ACP, 7 grains.
Yep.
And you're bumping against that 1,000 feet per second mark. The difference in it is substantial.
I think because I use CFE pistol in my 9mm. And
6 grains.
Yeah, I don't even think I'm using that much. I think it's like 4.5.
Yeah,
it doesn't take much.
And you're running 1,250 coming out of the muzzle.
Yeah, yeah. It does not take much of that pistol powder.
That's correct.
But same thing. If let's call it 350 Legend. Okay, I'm running what 35 grains of rifle powder for the same speed.
You run 35 grains of pistol powder in that thing. You got a pipe bomb.
Yeah. Ask me how I know.
Yeah. What, 3 times now?
Yeah, 3 times now. So I've isolated that ammo, and the investigation is ongoing. We're relatively certain that this is what has happened, is that some pistol powder got mixed in somewhere.
And we pulled the bullets the other day and identified it. We know what happened.
Yeah, we know what happened. So investigation is underway. We'll keep you apprised on that, but... So, yeah, but going through this journey of rebuilding the guns, I've got one left. I got Brandy's beautiful bronzed rifle left. Once I have that, we're back to whole. And in fact, I think we're up one.
But, up one.
Yeah.
Well, that's a plus.
I built an extra one in there.
Got to have spare because ammo's unpredictable.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, in all the years of doing this, though, I've never seen that situation. I've seen squibs, a plugged barrel do it.
Right.
But I've never seen it on an empty, unplugged barrel.
And that's what I originally thought it was until the last one, and we saw both rounds impact.
Well, and it's not just one manufacturer, so my gun didn't blow up. But my PRC, it's, again, manufactured ammo. Mm-hmm. I'm popping primers.
Now, I did talk to those guys. And one of the things that he was telling me, talked to the customer service technical guy, and he's...
Right, technical customer service.
Yeah, well,
service.
Whatever. But he said one of the things that, and especially he said in the PRC cartridges, is that it'll create a carbon ring.
Interesting.
So he said the best way to avoid that, he said, just make sure you're keeping your barrels really clean. And we're bad about that. We don't clean until we start.
I'm sorry. That gun has had maybe 100 rounds, maybe even less.
That gun has had about 350 rounds through it.
My PRC?
Yes. How many rounds did you shoot in a match?
Not many.
You shot more than you think. I've got a box of empty PRC brass from you. And I will bet there's at least 250, if not 300 rounds in there.
Still.
I'm processing PRC right now.
I'll just hand you all the stuff. Here you go.
I'm just curious. Maybe I just go get another manufacturer's ammo.
It's never a bad plan. If you intend to shoot factory, find one that works. That's consistent enough for you. And then buy the whole lot.
Well, that's what we did. And that's what surprised the hell out of us, because she'd been shooting this same lot for a year, and then we go out and she shoots what, 20 rounds, and half of them blew the primer out.
So you were saying that you had those on chronograph, and you were able to determine the ones that popped primers were over 3,000 feet a second,
mm-hmm.
which is hot by any standard, but the ones that didn't were just underneath.
They were about 2950.
So we need to scope the chamber on this, see if there is a carbon ring.
Yep.
Validate that or not, and then determine hot loads.
Right.
You may have to weigh them cartridges.
I might have to, and it, to their credit, when I talked to the folks over at Hornady, they said, you know, check for that carbon ring. If you're not seeing that, if you're not seeing any other issues, send us back a couple of boxes so we can test it.
It's probably a good plan.
But, you know, so they're... We're going to get taken care of on that, no matter what.
I have never had an issue with Hornady's folks. They take care of you very well.
They do.
Totally going to take that gun out, and we're going to check that shit.
Yeah, we should.
Right after the podcast.
All right, yeah. Let's go. I'm game.
It's still daylight here. But, no, so we've had ammo issues, and I think it happens.
You shoot enough, it's going to happen.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
Right. Well, and I kind of wonder, especially now, because we, you know, every manufacturer we've talked to is having problems getting powder. They're having problems getting primers. I talked to Arms Corps a year and a half ago, and they're getting in lots of primers, and when they test them, 50% of them fail, so they're rejecting the whole lot. Now what do they do?
Well, and that's the plight of a reloader or loader. If you can't find the one you've proven and trusted, you have to make a substitution.
Right.
And then you're starting over because everything changes.
Right. You know, and you know, of course, the primer manufacturers here can't keep up, so now they're having to look for foreign sources. Now, we used to get a lot of this stuff out of Russia. Well, that's no longer an option.
That's not an option anymore.
So, if you're having trouble finding components, that's why.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thankfully, after, what was it, 2013 in the Obama scare? I bought everything I could afford when I could find it.
That was a smart move. I did the same thing.
Because right now, I'm still reloading on components that I bought 10 years ago.
Valid. Me too.
You know, I've had to go out and get projectiles and powder when I can find it. But for the most part, I've been good.
Yeah. So shop what you know and buy a little more than you think you can use right now. Because tomorrow you might not be able to get it.
Well, we have an ammo company locally that said he's not sure he's going to be able to get components through the end of the year, which means he is able to produce through January of next year, and that's it.
Well, and this is the second time he's run into that. I mean, he started a business in the middle of all the supply chain problems.
We do.
Right.
Well, I don't want to say he started it then. I mean, he's been doing this for a decade. But it was when we started all the supply chain problems in 2020, he actually had to close down for, it was about a year and a half, because he didn't have any, he didn't have the raw materials to build ammo.
That's which right. kind of sucks because he's from Opal, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Okay, so when he shuts down, the whole town is out of work. It's over.
And we love the little guy.
The whole seven people that live there are unemployed.
That's right. And he embodies a small businessman. When he has a struggle, it's the very indicator species of the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like when frogs go tits up in an ecosystem, you know something's off.
Right.
It's small business is the same thing.
Right. So, not a sponsor, but it's Opal Ammunition. They're great guys over there. They make good ammo. We've been using it for years.
And look them up online because they're not really into distribution a whole lot. But look them up online. Give them a call.
They do a lot of gun shows and shows like that. But, yeah, they're not.
They do, and they're in some dealers
locally.
Here and there.
Right.
I think they're not all local either. He travels coast to coast often.
Good. Good to hear.
Yeah, but not like everybody's going to find it. So no. Just look him up.
But good ammo. Just understand it's common calibers, mostly NATO stuff. I know he's got some 300 Blackout. He's got a few other cartridges, 357 SIG, that type of thing. But
he's loading 458 SOCOM.
He is loading 458 SOCOM, and it's actually not a bad price.
Because I'll load it, but it is a pain in the butt to load.
Right.
That cartridge is finicky.
Yeah.
But finding somebody that factory loads it, I used to buy Corbon, and then they had a hard time delivering. So I went looking for other places. I ended up loading it. But it is a kick in the pants to run that cartridge. Now, it's expensive. Make no mistake about it. It's $6 a round.
Mm.
It's just fun, though.
We're used to that, though.
True.
I mean, I just bought components because I've got to reload ammunition for Brandy's hunting rifle. You were just talking about you got your match rifle, you got your hunting rifle. You have, I believe you have two, maybe three loaded cartridges for your hunting gun. Not that it matters because you don't have any tags.
And even with General, I can only get two of those animals, General, so there's two. So I'll have a spare for next year.
She doesn't burn ammo when she
No,
hunts.
She doesn't. So I order components to load 200, which means I'll never have to load again.
Yeah, TikTok, brother, though. It's almost September.
It'll be here next week.
Yeah.
If it's not here this week, I ordered it out of Mid-South Shooting Supply, and those guys are usually on the ball.
They're pretty quick. Yep.
So.
And I already have three.
She's good to go for this season.
And I can only get two General.
Well, still.
But military mindset. One is none. Two is one. Three is enough.
No, three is not enough. Three is better. 200 is way better.
Oh, it's all better.
I don't know. I'm the guy that if I don't have at least 1,000 rounds, I have none.
Yep, I'm in the same boat. It's a sickness.
It is a sickness, and I will tell you right now, if you're thinking about getting into long range shooting or really just shooting in general, heroin's cheaper.
And side effects are about the same.
What is it? High blood pressure, craziness,
headaches, your teeth fall out. Yeah.
When did this become a pharmaceutical commercial where they dare you to take it?
Oh,
yeah, no kidding.
God, that's horrible.
But truly, parents out there, if you want your kids to stay off of drugs, get them into precision rifle. They won't have money for drugs.
I will say that, I can't even say that anymore. I was like, oh, man, the NRL 22, you can get into that relatively inexpensive, but no, not anymore.
Not you can't.
Because now that it's become hot shit crazy in the competition circuit, now everybody's making everything specialty for the 22, and even the ammunition is not, it's not the old Remington green box shit.
It is not.
The stuff they're coming out with now, CCI's got some pretty hot shit, 22.
Well, the magic in 22 is the consistency of it all.
Right.
And a rimfire cartridge, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I need some for Smokey.
You do. You've got a couple boxes.
But it's not the brand new fancy stuff.
If it'll shoot it, your Smokey likes what it likes, and it doesn't like anything else.
Yeah, don't change Smokey's food. You'll give it indigestion.
I'm going to have to eventually because you can't find what I have.
I know, guy. You can find it.
you know a guy. You were telling me about a rifle that you're trying to build, 20 or like a 25 caliber. No, not even that.
I mean, I have gone completely off the reservation with this one.
Yes.
I am going to try and build my 10 Eshelberger. So it's a 10 caliber. And so nobody bores in a barrel blank the 10 caliber. It's a total custom Wildcat.
What's the bullet weight?
7 grains.
Grain of rice.
About that. Yep. 4,300 feet a second.
What do you do with it?
I'm not exactly sure yet, but I kind of want one.
I mean, you could probably come in the shop and hunt mice.
I could.
That'd probably be good on mice.
Yeah.
Chipmunk. Actually, when I was out at the range teaching, they were telling me that they have a problem with chipmunks. I think that would be absolutely perfect. Go hunt chipmunks.
Yep. I want to suppress it.
Suppress what? I mean, I think an air gun's louder.
Oh no, that's 4,300 feet a second, and it's based on the 22 Hornet cartridge.
Okay, so
it's a center fire.
Okay, so seven. What the hell kind of primer fits in the
totally
small
gonna,
rifle?
I'm totally gonna buy him a sling for Christmas.
I'm buying him a new stapler.
Yeah, this thing's so retarded. It's so funny. I asked just Shaw Barrels if they would get me a barrel for it, and I got told to go fuck myself. And that's a quote.
Yeah.
And that was during business hours. I wasn't even calling Matt after he started drinking. It's just one of those.
You should have waited. He'd have probably agreed to it.
No, not this. Not this. He knows better.
I'm assuming match barrel.
It was a custom match okay. barrel. So the only way to do it.
Right. Yep. Okay. So 7-grain projectile. How much powder is behind this thing?
It's like 15 grains.
Okay.
Double the projectile weight. Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking, not even 50 BMG.
No. Not even close. No.
I can't think of another caliber that uses double the powder weight of the projectile.
This is the kind of thing that if it actually shot a person, would burn a hole through you so fast the hole would coagulate on itself. Nobody would ever know that you're bleeding to death inside. Yes, it's retarded.
Oh.
But I got given a book for Christmas, and it's Cartridges of the World. And this thing's 3 inches thick. What I learned one Christmas morning, sitting there thumbing through this book, there is nothing new under the sun.
No.
They just remake the old cartridge and give it a new name.
Mm-hmm.
For example, 8.6 Blackout, 338 Whisper in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a micrometer worth of difference.
Twist rate.
1 in 3.
Yeah, that is insane.
300-grain projectile.
Right. Which, yeah, I get it. You got
10-inch barrel.
Yeah. 10-inch barrel.
10-inch barrel, stabilized to 400 yards.
Yeah, but, you know, it's proven. I mean, we watched Kevin Brittingham kill everything in Africa.
Everything with that thing.
So.
He calls the gun the fixer. Because it does. He has shot Cape Buffalo, Hippo, you name it, the big game. He's taken it with this thing.
That's impressive.
But it's not new.
No.
Faxon came out with it and called it new. 8.6 Blackout, right? It's not new. It's
right.
The same cartridge from 1984. 300 Blackout, 300 Whisper.
Yep. No, it's even 6.5 Creedmoor. It's just a modified 6.5 Swede.
Well, that's a way different than 6.5 Swede. But that's a whole separate conversation because the Creedmoor was built from the ground up, but all they did is change the neck and the shoulder on a 308 case.
Right.
So it's not really different. They just made it more efficient.
Well, and I agree with you. I don't want to go down that road because that's another podcast. But because we're actually, we're over time. So
now what are you going to cut?
I'm not going to cut a damn thing.
Oh, we're going to let them run along. I like it.
Oh, they can handle 4 minutes. They'll be fine.
Okay, fair enough.
You stuck at a light anyway. Probably cleaning off your dashboard.
Eshelberger. Say it out loud. Eshelberger.
So when you can't hit the chipmunk, you're just going to keep blaming your gun.